Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Socey. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. A little later on in the show, depending on time, I'll replay my interview with actor and director James Keat, who directed the Glen Campbell documentary I'll Be Me. Of course, Glen Campbell passed away last week. Hard to break down the Glen Campbell filmography, Joe Shearer. It's basically True Grit, that one film with Joe Namath, and it's really about it.
Yeah.
But Joe Shearer, the film yap, is here, who will provide you with a little of this, a little of that, and all things Cardinal information. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Yeah, that's what I do, so that's why you bring me in, is Cardinals updates.
You're the Cardinal representative. I'm the Tigers representative, which is great for Indianapolis radio.
Yeah.
Always. Now,
back in 2006, it was really timely in October, right?
So. Shut your mouth. Don't you ever bring up 2006. What's wrong with you? I invited him, folks. Okay. Can you tell? We haven't seen anything new this week. But
right.
Did you? No, you didn't see it. Because really, did the kids want to see Annabelle Creation?
Yeah, Jenna probably would see it if I asked, but the others wouldn't. So.
That's right. Your daughter, for the record, Joe's daughter is into scary movies.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And the stuff that we deemed classics, she found a little subpar.
Right.
But then again, she thinks One Direction is still better than the Beatles.
Yes. And yeah, so, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt a little
bit. Now, has she seen Dunkirk, because there's a One Direction guy in it?
She has not. I'm not sure if she's aware that he's in that or not, but he was her favorite. So, yeah, she was the one.
Some parent you are. Jeez.
Well, yeah, you know.
I understand. So anyway, but our kids started school this week, and as I'm sure for many of you, it did. How's it been getting their sleep clock back on track?
Yeah, that's pretty difficult. you know, you say the week before, okay, we're going to practice going to bed at the right time, you know, 9 o'clock, and no, 9:45, still up.
They're still wound up, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's been a mess, mostly getting my youngest son to stay in his own bed. He likes to sneak off into his brother's room and sleep in there because he gets scared in the middle of the night. So.
I say sleep or to mess around, because they are brothers.
Right. Now, he goes in there pretty much and just lays on the floor and goes to sleep. Sometimes he might wake him up, and, you know, that's when we'll have to get involved. But
I
yeah.
see. Welcome to the family portion of the show. so, no, you have a son that is now full-blown into athletics.
Yes.
So when do you, of course, old man here, when do you start showing him North Dallas 40 and Bull Durham and Eight Men Out?
We have talked about Eight Men Out quite a bit. Actually, I watched Eight Men Out, and he kind of bounced in and out. Yeah. He came in for the baseball scenes. And, you know, I talked about Shoeless Joe Jackson a little bit.
You told him not to take a bribe.
Right.
And don't throw a game.
Yeah, we've tried a few movies. He's seen The Sandlot, of course, and he really loves that.
It's the 20th anniversary of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot, you know what? Because I was in college, so I think I was too old for that audience, and people absolutely swear by that film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, it's typical baseball movie, you know, for kind of kid geared, but it's okay. It's fun. And we actually he plays travel baseball, and we had an end of the season thing, and our team dressed up like characters from The Sandlot. Of course, he was Benny the Jet. He had to be Benny the Jet. I had to go buy him a Dodgers hat, and that was a fun night. We also did walk up music for them. So
okay.
So that was
now,
a lot of fun.
You heard me snark earlier to your lovely daughter about her taste in music, and you're gonna make me feel old. What are the boys using for walk up music in 2017?
Well, I had kind of a bit of input for Masons, but there was a lot of stuff like
Cardinals theme, whatever the Cardinals fight song is.
I'll tell you in a minute. After
okay,
we had stuff like Thunderstruck by AC/DC. There were a couple kids who picked that.
Sure.
So I actually put all these together. So I had to kind of, you know, I made ringtones of it and put it on my phone. You know, of a little snippet of each song. It was a lot of kind of rockish kind of music.
Stuff you would normally hear in a sports arena of some kind.
Yeah, and for
Have you had to explain to the kids Gary Glitter, Queen, and the Village People?
Right. Yes. Yeah, so somebody had, y'all ready for this, which was, yeah. And I found this song for Mason a while out, and I had to kind of talk him into it. But my wife was totally on board, which is I went the rap route, and I did I Want to Be a Baller by Little Troy. And a couple of the dads looked up at me when I played it and just nodded their heads and smiled.
Wow.
And I thought it was a really fun choice. So, yeah, it was selectively edited, of course. So
of course, yeah. Yes. See, I would be a terrible stadium guy because I'd be playing Thelonious Monk and Rush, and, you know, and not Tom Sawyer, the 10-minute instrumental that they had
right.
on that one album in 1978. Jeez. Okay. Well, we'll get to that now. Best film of the summer mm-hmm. for you?
Well, I will. I'll have to own up to not seeing a couple of things. I haven't seen Dunkirk yet.
Okay.
I didn't see War for the Planet of the Apes.
Are the kids interested in the ape films?
You know, they were, but when the time came to go see it, they had something better to do and was like, yeah. So I just missed it. My older son kind of was interested in seeing it. I think I took him to see the second one, so he was kind of interested in it, but then he kind of lost interest. I guess I could go with the predictable favorite for me anyway. It would be Spider-Man: Homecoming. I really enjoyed that.
That much? More than Wonder Woman?
Yeah. I liked Wonder Woman a whole lot. Yeah, maybe Wonder Woman, maybe Guardians of the Galaxy even. I mean, we're going to go all superheroes.
That was pretty solid. Yeah.
I liked all of those a lot. So let's just say the superhero movies.
Okay.
I'll just go that way.
I'm Dunkirk, Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, according to your list, I haven't seen Apes. Mm-hmm. I did like Guardian. I really liked Guardian more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man Homecoming, okay, it's so funny because the difference between Spider-Man Homecoming and Wonder Woman, without giving away stuff, even though the film's been out for months,
right.
There's a plot point in Spider-Man involving family I didn't know about. Yeah. I didn't see it coming, mm-hmm. and I thought it was very clever on that.
That was a surprise for me even too. I thought it was fun. That's not comic book canon, but it's not one of those changes that's going to upset me. It's just kind of a Spider-Man.
Something that was already written in the comic world?
If it was, it would have been a more recent development.
Okay.
I don't think it was, but
all right.
But you know that stuff can get mixed up so much anyway.
And then, as much as I enjoyed Wonder Woman, the last 20 minutes or so, which mm-hmm. becomes a CGI fight. And by the way, there are certain mm-hmm. actors that we love. Mm-hmm. But you can't cast them in things that requires them to do a turn.
Yeah.
This and unfortunately, the actor who we like very much in this film and has done a lot of other things, mm-hmm. you can't. It's like Liev Schreiber.
Right.
You can't cast him in that anymore mm-hmm. because he's. And of course, Joe and I come from a wrestling fan standpoint. He's going to hit you with a chair.
Right.
Eventually.
You know that's coming with him.
You know what? It's like Sting teaming up with anybody. Somebody's going to hit him,
right.
and it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
So. Not a big shocker for that Lester, but anyway.
Right.
So, okay, cool. That's a pretty solid summer.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
for the big stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Now the other reason why I had Joe on, besides the fact that it's been a while and it's always fun to have him here, and we talk sports and other nonsense.
Right.
And by the way, it's request day here at Film Sociology. A few weeks ago, when Martin Landau died. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking. I knew you had done this, but I will. The floor is yours. You, Joe Shearer, have a Martin Landau story, which
yeah.
I would love to once again immortalize on radio here,
right.
please.
Yeah, yeah. I interviewed him, and I kind of tried to do the math. I actually went back today and reread it. I think it was in 2006 was when I actually interviewed him when City of Ember came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of all things.
Right. That's exactly right. Because I couldn't even remember what movie it was that I'd interviewed him for. I knew it was something that was, you know.
Made $12.
Right. Yeah. I knew it was something smaller, something, you know, it was oddball and random. And they, I don't know, they happened to slip a little clause in there. They had to do publicity for it. So I was like, I'm going to take advantage of that. You know, and a little inside baseball, which I think we've mentioned here and there before. when you do interviews like that, typically the phone rings at the scheduled – well, not at the scheduled time. Generally about 20 minutes after the scheduled time, to which they will inform you that, you know, your interview subject is running late and it'll be another half hour.
And it went from 20 minutes to 10.
Right.
And it's your fault.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, when the phone rings at the given time, you expect – the publicist to be on there. Hey, Joe, it's, you know, Michelle from whatever.
Right. And generally, they're also listening in.
Yes.
To make sure you're answering the questions involving the reason why you're talking to that person and that you are not you're not Bubba the Love Sponge and asking really inappropriate stuff.
Exactly right.
Right.
And, yeah, staying on topic, that kind of thing. You're not, you know, it's not make sure you at least get your cursory questions in about the new movie.
Correct.
So my phone rings. I was actually at the dentist with my kids, and I was out, or I was meeting my wife and kids at the dentist, and I arrived there, and the phone rings, and I'm going, oh, here it is, and I've got my recorder ready. You know, I made this time. You know, I'm out by my car, and I answer the phone, and I hear, Joe, Martin Landau, and I was like, whoa, I'm not even ready for this. You know, I usually have this good minute and a half, 2 minutes, you know, where hi.
And he's in his 70s at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, you know, his office number popped up on my caller ID. And, you know, I was just like, wow, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we had, it remains one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. I got to talk to him about Alfred Hitchcock. I got to talk to him about, you know, this city of Embers.
So did you do like two questions about Embers and then just go deep into his resume?
I actually, like I said, went back and read it today. I believe there's just one question about City of Ember. And he pretty quickly, I think it was why he did the movie. And he mentioned the director, you know, Gil Kean was the guy's name. And he threw a couple of, you know, pretty much threw all the stock answers out there in one question. And then we moved on to he was interested in talking about his other things he's done recently. So we talked about a movie he did with Ellen Burstyn called Lovely Still, which I still haven't seen, which gushed about.
Yes.
And some other stuff he'd been doing at the time. He had just done some spots on Entourage. And so we'd spent some time talking about that. And he, you know, we talked about a joke that he ad-libbed a joke during rehearsals, where, you know, he mentions he's playing golf with Jeremy Piven and Phil Mickelson on the show. and you know, of course, that's what he's doing in the show. And he's like, how cool is that? You know, so he ad-libbed this joke where he, you know, it was, you know, of course, Ari Gold was the character in Entourage.
Right.
And the line was, it's harder to get an audience with you than George W. Bush. You know, the president at the time, 2006. So he said he didn't think that line was very good, so he changed it to Osama bin Laden. And then Doug Ellen, the producer of the show, was like, okay, that's the line that's going to go on the show. So, those are just kind of little things that were really neat, you know, to you kind of get an indication of who he was and really into, you know, he wasn't the guy that shows up, reads the lines, and walks off.
Right. Did you ask about Ed Wood?
I think we talked about, I'd have to look again. I kind of glossed over. We talked about it briefly.
Okay.
But like I said, there was a lot of that, and then it turned to Hitchcock, and it was.
he thought his character in North by Northwest was in love with James Mason.
Yes, he said he purposely did that,
which you could never do in the 50s.
Yeah, and he talked about the lines that he had put in there that kind of were to that effect, and he said the one that he keyed in on was call it my woman's intuition.
That's right.
Yeah, and he said it, he goes, I said that in that certain way, and it was, I think James Mason was his co-star.
Yeah,
and that, I guess James Mason was pretty upset about that. There's a lot of grousing, at least public grousing about it later on.
Well, it's because people know about the. If you don't, there's a great documentary called The Celluloid Closet, which is about the images of gays and lesbians in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And one of the regular talking heads in this documentary was Gore Vidal, mm-hmm. and he talks about the relationship between Stephen Boyd's character and Charlton Heston's character in Ben Hur.
Mm-hmm.
And he had written it that the Boyd character had known Heston's character said they were kids, but that he was in love with them. Mm-hmm. And William Wyler went up to Gore Vidal, the writer of the film, and said, "Are you implying what I think you're implying?" And he's like, "Yes." And he goes, "Okay, don't tell Heston. I'll talk with Heston. You talk to Boyd." And anyway, and he points out, if you look at the moments of Stephen Boyd looking at Charlton Heston, and mm-hmm. Heston's completely unaware.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And you said he played golf in Entourage.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because right after Martin died, I watched Ed Wood, because it's my favorite Landau performance and still my favorite Tim mm-hmm. Burton film.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're a longtime film sociology, pulled a string is a part of the film sociology vocabulary,
uh-huh.
only because there's certain lines of his I cannot play on the air, his takedown on Karloff.
Uh-huh.
But there's the other one I watched, he was and Martin Landau was one of those guys, he always delivered, even if the film was, even if it was BAPS, something that was just absolute junk, he knew it. But he delivered.
Yeah.
But he was a villain in a Jim Brown film called Black Gun, two N's. And Jim Brown is a club owner named Gun.
Right.
And there's, his brother has some dealings with the mob. And Landau's character is this kind of a middleman for the mafia. But there's a scene on a golf course. So now that you mentioned it, I'm like, okay, he legitimately golfed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Cool. This is so, and the thing is, Landau only has like a handful of scenes. He's in at the very beginning, and he's at it at the very end. I think he's intimidating Jim Brown, who's been beaten up with a blowtorch, and saying, "I'll burn you, black is beautiful, baby." It's 1970s,
yeah.
Folks.
Yeah.
The other great oddity to this film is Jim Brown is a club owner. The charismatic Jim Brown,
mm-hmm.
and there's a cameo. One of the patrons in the club is football player, not Richmond Blues artist, Deacon Jones. And Jones had just signed with the Chargers, apparently. But he's credited later. But getting an introduction credit, mm-hmm. playing a role, he was not playing himself, A's pitcher Vita Blue.
Wow.
Not kidding. He had a scene. He tried to act. It's interesting. So yeah, this was a film from 1973 that delivered. So
wow,
I
gotta check that out sometime.
I might let you borrow it because one of the henchmen is Bruce Glover,
okay,
Crispin's dad.
Wow,
uh huh. So Bernie Casey's in it if I remember correctly. It is a piece of 1970s drive-in fare that should not be missed.
Nice.
Going back a little bit to I threw off a bit of snark on the film career of Glenn Campbell, and I at least want to mention this. A little later on, I'll be playing the interview with James Keach about the documentary he directed, I'll Be Me. The Cool Ones, True Grit, Norwood. He played himself in Any Which Way You Can. He played in Uphill All the Way, which was a weird Western thing with Mel Tillis and Roy Clark.
Wow.
And I forgot he was the one of the voices in Rockadoodle from 1991. Again,
wow.
Past my time of animation.
Yeah, yeah. I remember
that one. So anyway, there's that.
Yeah.
Okay. Going over to the drive-in. And again, this all depends on when you're listening to the show. I should mention, by the way, with Glenn Campbell, depending on when you're listening to the show, Monday night at 8 o'clock on WFYI 1 television, they are replacing the Emmylou Harris special with a Glenn Campbell special.
Oh,
that's
very nice.
At 8 o'clock. All right. Now, to the drive-ins. Over at the Tibbs. Wow. Okay. Here's Screen 1, Movie 1, Annabelle Creation.
Mm-hmm.
And War for the Planet of the Apes.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. That's not terrible.
I guess that's a pairing.
Yeah.
Screen 2, Girls Trip.
And
Detroit.
I have actually seen Girls Trip.
Did you really?
I saw that last week.
And?
Okay.
How is it compared to the other? Okay. The white Girls Night Out movie.
I was going to say, I didn't watch those.
Okay.
I have not seen those. It was kind of a fluke that we saw this. We went to Cincinnati last weekend.
Oh, I was going to say, was it one of those weeks there was nothing else to review?
Yeah, no. I actually didn't even review it.
You just went.
Like I said, we went to Cincinnati.
Okay.
You'll kind of love this. My wife got surprised me with tickets to the Cardinals and Reds game.
Oh, how nice.
At Great American Ballpark.
Great American Ballpark, yeah.
And so we went with a couple of ours, two people that are friends of ours. They are married to each other. I went with the husband. It was one of my friends. We went to the game together, and my wife and the wife went to IKEA, and then they kind of just moved around. They got a drink, and, you know.
Wait, instead of the ball game, IKEA?
Yeah, you know.
I think it would have been – well, she might have spent less money at IKEA than you do because ballpark food is expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, they wanted to see Girls Trip, and the late show was at 10:10. We actually left the Cardinals game early.
Oh, were they up that ahead?
I think it was 4-1 at that point. We hit seventh inning stretch, and you know, the Reds were thoroughly kind of beaten down. And so I was like, okay, let's go ahead and we can
go. You
ahead
act
and
like
go.
A Dodgers fan. You leave in the seventh.
So we went and got to the theater right, because another hobby of mine is going to different cities and checking out their movie theaters. You know, it was the local AMC, and it was still, you know, it was pretty nice. It had the same seats like ours does, the nice recliners, but, you know, the outside was, you know, different. And so, you know, I always like doing that. So we went and saw Girls Trip, and I won't say it was bad. It had some laughs in it. At one point, they completely ripped off a joke from a YouTube video. And I had seen this YouTube video. I can't really say much to give it away other than it involves...
It's not two girls, one cup.
No. It involves a lewd act with a grapefruit.
Oh,
and the video, you know, my wife stumbled on the video a while back and showed me, you know, and it was funny, you know, in that kind of a way. But they introduced this to the movie, and they proceed then to do the exact same thing that they did in this video. And it kind of, that was kind of the point where the movie lost me. I was like, you know.
And how far into it was this?
I mean, it was a good halfway in.
Okay.
You know, there, like I said, there were a few decent jokes, but, you know, and then at that point it kind of just turned into, you know, we're just going to do some stuff and maybe it's funny and maybe
so
it's.
So there's some girl bonding and then there's bad drinking and bad life choices, but nobody gets killed.
Yeah, there's not much violence in it.
Okay. Well, because there was the other girl's movie that ended poorly for a guy. So anyway, Girls Trip in Detroit. There's that. Oh boy, The Dark Tower and Atomic Blonde.
Oh
yeah, good looking people with guns. Yeah. Okay, and oh, I didn't know they made another one of these. The Nut Job 2, Nutty by Nature,
yes.
Dated reference,
uh-huh.
And the Emoji Movie.
Uh-huh.
Did you see the first Nut Job film?
I did see the first Nut Job. I kind of liked it. But it had a lot of, you know, the big stars. It wasn't a great movie. Steve Carell was the squirrel character, I believe, in that, and he kind of kept it afloat. It's funny you said that you didn't realize that. They had made another one of those. My a couple of other of my friends that you guys are familiar with, Evan Dossie and Nick Rogers, film app writers and noted local critics as well. We do a this might be the nerdiest thing I do, a fantasy box office movie league.
Yeah, please, you know what? I might get to the Glenn Campbell interview. I don't know, because there's a follow-up that goes with this. But okay. Go ahead.
So essentially, we're predicting the box office for the week. So you you get what they call $1,000, quote-unquote $1,000, and they assign a point value or a dollar value to each movie, right? You have 10 screens that you get to essentially, you're picking 10 movies, right?
Okay.
And, you know, the movie, if it was like Spider-Man, its opening weekend, they actually – broke it down by day. So you could go Spider-Man Friday, Spider-Man Saturday, Spider-Man Sunday.
Thank you, Box Office Mojo.
Right. Yeah, so you get to pick one of the days, and it's like $400 if you pick the new one opening. You know, it varies. They kind of, you know, it's there's some science to it, I guess.
See, I thought it was whatever that whatever money that movie made, those were your points.
Yes, yeah, so essentially there's 10 movies, and then how those movies perform, that throws money into your coffer, whoever has the most at the end of the weekend is the winner.
Did you guys make a trophy for this?
We did not. At least not that I know of.
And do you fantasy sports on top of this?
I do fantasy sports. I haven't done any football so far. Football is what I generally do. But I mean, I don't do – I have done baseball years ago, but it's so much more work. You know?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's like the scene in – is it Knocked Up? Where yes. Paul Rudd has the – he finally confesses to Leslie Mann he has a fantasy baseball team.
Yes, yes. Yeah. She thinks she's catching him having an affair, and
it's
draft.
It's worse. It's draft.
So we had this conversation about the nut job too, about how – because there's a strategy to it where you can pick the same movie multiple times. And if you get a cheaper movie that you pick multiple times and it is like the big performer for the week, you get like a bonus, you know, and so it basically ensures you're going to win. So Evan is trying to convince us to pick the nut job too. He's trying to do that because he thinks it's advantageous to him. And so he comes to us in a serious way and is like, oh, I'm all in on the nut job too. I'm going to get like five of them, you know.
No, he didn't. Nobody's in on the nut job. Not even the producers of the nut job too are in on the nut job.
And I said, you know, I've got three kids and I'm a movie critic and I hardly knew that this movie was even coming out. I said, I don't think it's been publicized that well.
You know? No, let's see.
Yeah, who are even the voices?
Will Arnett, wow. Katherine Heigl, Maya Rudolph, Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan's your fourth voice.
Yeah.
Peter Stormare. Oh, I like Peter. Bobby Cannavale, Bobby Moynihan, Jeff Dunham, Gabriel. Oh, okay, now we're getting in the gist.
There we go. Now we're going.
Rob Tinkler, and you know. You could make an independent comedy with these people instead of this.
Yeah, those are, I mean, those are decent enough stars, but.
But, yeah, okay.
Somebody is.
From the writer of Escape from Planet Earth.
Somebody's cashing in contractual obligations,
good
making a
gosh,
poor choice here.
Yikes. So, anyway. And apparently some of our critics, including Richard Probst, have dubbed the Emoji Movie worst film of the year already.
Yeah.
It's in a strong running.
Yeah, yeah. My youngest son said to me when we went to see Spider-Man, and he says, oh, I want to see the Emoji Movie. And I looked at him and I said, do you really?
You're trying to do the Jedi Mind Trip? No, you don't.
Right, yeah. No, you don't want to see that. And he says, I do not want to see that movie. No.
There's only been, and I'm sure I've said, well, anyway, I'll do it anyway, but there's only been one film that when Emma was younger and she was sort of interested in it, and I just ignored her because I had to review, I remember reviewing it in advance, Shark Tale.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Emma really wanted to see it. Like, and my brain was like, I don't want to sit through that a second time. And then after like a week, she asked about it. I went, I think it went already.
Yeah, which it doesn't do very
which
well.
Which isn't that far from truth. Yeah. But anyway, that is all happening over at the Tibbs, over at the Skyline. Ooh, Annabelle Creation and The House. And I don't know anybody who has seen The House.
Yeah, I even mentioned that to my wife about, hey, why don't we go see, because we had a free evening, and I was like, why don't we go see The House? It's got Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler, and she's like, eh. And that was kind of my thought about it, too. I was like, okay.
Yep. So, anyway, that's happening there. School is, I think it's in session at IU, but they do have, again, this listen depending on where you're listening to the show, if you haul tail down to Bloomington right now on Saturday at 3 o'clock, they are showing Chuck, the Liev Schreiber, Naomi Watts film that Schreiber plays boxer Chuck Wepner, the inspiration of Rocky.
Yeah.
It's a cool film.
It's worth seeing, definitely.
I'm a sucker for boxing movies, and this one, it tells the real story.
Yeah.
And the guy does a decent Stallone impression, not Schreiber, the guy who plays Stallone.
Where the guy is.
Right. And then at 6 o'clock at IU Cinema, Angels in America Part 2. Thursday the 17th, Ocean Waves from 1993. Kiki, the 2016 documentary on Friday the 18th. Ocean Waves and Kiki on Saturday the 19th, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Monday the 21st, President's Choice, the 1949 drama The Fountainhead for you and... far, far better than all of the Atlas Shrugs put together. And then, oh man, Thursday, August 24th, as a part of a series they're calling Kids These Days, Boys in the Hood from 1991. And then Friday the 25th. Here's a night. Yeah. Here we go. Friday, August 25th at 6:30 p.m. as a part of the Staff Selects series, mm-hmm. Slapshot, mm-hmm. the Essential Black and White Movie, Essential Black and White Indies from the 90s from 1994. That's a small list.
Yeah.
But Clerks and then Midnight Movie, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
That's really strong.
That's a good night, yeah.
College students, take advantage of this and go to that triple feature. Yeah. My gosh.
And they should have called that Boys in the Hood night kids those days.
Because
that
with
that is
a Z.
Yeah. That's
rebellious.
That's a wild
night. Oh, my gosh. That's a great day there.
And college students, also, if you've not seen Boys in the Hood, go see it.
You really should. Yeah. One of the great film debuts of John Singleton.
Yeah.
Over at the IMA, their summer series, it's all sold out except for next Friday, Serenity. So, come on, nerds. Go. If you're a Joss Whedon fan... And y'all are out there, Serenity. There's still tickets for Serenity. Everything else is sold out.
Apparently, all that complaining they made back when that movie came out still applies. No one is still seeing that movie.
Good reference.
It is a good movie.
It is. Yeah. And then at the Historic Art Craft Theater, again, depending on when you're listening to this show, at 7:30 p.m. down at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, another great film directing debut, 12 Angry Men, directed by the great Sidney Lumet.
Yes.
Friday and Saturday, August 18th and 19th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. I remember this film being released in the summer and said then, why in the hell are they not releasing this at Halloween time?
Yeah.
And yet they're showing it in August. Disney's Hocus Pocus.
Yeah.
If you remember Bette Midler, Kathy and the Jimmy, and Sarah Jessica Parker, a witch film in August. Okay.
Yeah.
August 25th and 26th is the All 80s Film Festival. Here we go. I don't think anything by Spike Lee or Oliver Stone is going to be on this
Probably
list.
Not. Yeah.
Big, 10 p.m. on the 25th, 2 p.m. on the 26th, Raising Arizona. That was a first date movie for me.
Yeah.
Hi, Kelly.
Very nice.
5 p.m. on Saturday the 26th, Adventures in Babysitting. As much as I love looking at Elizabeth Shue, I don't want to hear her sing the blues. I want to hear Albert Collins sings the blues, like that scene in at Fitzgerald's. Saturday at 7:30 p.m., Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I think I'm reading this wrong. Sorry. Let me try again. There are times where you put the title and the dates in the wrong position. So
yes.
Big at 7:30 p.m. on Friday. Raising Arizona, 10 p.m., on Friday.
That fits a little better thematically.
That does make more sense. Okay, Saturday at 2, Adventures in Babysitting. Saturday at 5, Stand By Me. Mm-hmm. Saturday at 7:30, The Karate Kid. Saturday at 10, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yep.
That makes more sense.
That's a pretty solid lineup.
And then Friday and Saturday, September 8th and 9th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. with your guy Martin, North by Northwest.
Yes.
So mark your calendars over there at the Historic Art Craft Theater. Speaking of movie events and involving guys of the film yap, because I know Sam talked about it a little bit, but a while back you guys had, and I think it is actually called the F Yeah Film Festival.
Yes, between us, we don't censor, but yes.
but we're on the air, so yes.
Right. Yes.
So fill folks in on that.
So it started up last year. Again, it was essentially Nick Rogers and I, the two old cadres of the group.
Excuse me?
Well,
oh,
you know,
your group.
Of our group.
Oh,
relatively speaking of, you know, our sub. It's a subgroup of us and Evan and Sam, who were both in their mid-20s.
Yeah, they're still two in their age. It's
yeah. And so, you know, it started with, this movie is really great. This movie is really great. I can't believe you haven't seen this movie. You know, it's one of those.
As we do.
Right, and it turned into, we should just have a film festival. Last year, we actually tied it in with one of my kind of favorite things of my personal experiences, which was my record of seeing a certain number of movies in a given weekend. In 1989, opening weekend of Batman, the Burton Batman, it would have been June 89, I watched 15 movies from Friday evening to Sunday afternoon.
Whoa. Okay, first off, you didn't watch Batman 15 times.
No. We watched Batman as the first film.
Right.
Opening night, went to the theater and watched it. Went home and rented three movies, watched them, I believe, that night, went back first thing in the morning. You know, this thing.
Do you remember what they were?
Not all of them. I remember that Psycho and Lethal Weapon were both first-time viewings for me.
Oh, man.
And I, other than that, it's kind of just a mash of different things. There's probably a lot of junk, probably a lot of things that match up with the F Yeah Film Festival, as a matter of fact. So last year we watched things like I broke my record and got to 16.
Your family must be proud.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. It's something that I've kind of been wanting to do, you know, ever since I was a kid. You know, I was like, I need to break that someday. Uh-huh. Maybe with my kids we'll do it. You know, my kids kind of don't want to do that. So I did it with my friends instead. And we watched a bunch of, you know, and a lot of the movies I'd seen. We watched stuff like Showdown in Little Tokyo, which I had actually never seen.
Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee, ladies and gentlemen.
My big pick that I was really excited for the guys to see was Point Break.
And 100% adrenaline.
Yeah, and we went to the midnight screening of Roadhouse at the Keystone Art Cinema.
Wait, was it well attended?
It was, there was probably 25, 30 people there.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it wasn't a ton, but it was, you know, in the small theater.
Were they into it?
Yeah, yeah, okay. It was a lot of fun. So, you know, we watched a bunch of stuff there. This year we did it just a little bit differently. We decided we were going to make it kind of a, you know, semi-annual event. It's, we do like 0.5 versions of it where we'll watch like two or three movies together, you know.
Uh-huh.
But this year we did it a little bit differently, and we each got selections that, and we didn't tell everyone else what we were picking. So, I'm trying to even think of what I picked now.
Well, I know there was one on the list that I'm excited to chime in on, but continue.
Well, so among some of the selections,
I'm sorry, wasn't there a decade thing as well?
Yes. Yeah. So it was, so we got assigned decades, you know, and. So with the idea is we choose one from each decade and we watch them like that. It kind of broke down a little bit and we ended up doing like – we ended up getting extra picks. And like I had a couple of 80s picks and, you know. And
did you trade them for a draft pick cash?
Right. So, yeah, we ended up – it was like when it was our turn, we could kind of ad lib a little bit and go, oh, let's just pick this one instead.
Okay.
So we ended up watching – the big one that I ended up choosing was No Retreat, No Surrender from 1985. Which
constantly playing on cable, rented at the video store.
And I actually found, I actually recently watched the Riff Tracks version of it,
ooh,
which is really good, but also includes scenes that I had not seen it. The version I have watched my whole life, you know,
uh-huh,
we had illegally recorded.
You didn't.
Right.
We don't condone that behavior.
Right. Exactly.
Yours,
right.
Mister.
It was somebody other than me who did it. You know, I was a minor. So it had additional scenes and if you don't, in case you don't know, this is not the screen debut of Jean-Claude Van Damme, but I believe it's like his second credited role, I think it's his third, as a matter of fact. And his first one was like in Breakin'. He was an extra. Yeah.
Because I know he was famously fired off of Predator.
Off of Predator, yeah. Which he would have done Predator probably, I believe, I want to say right after this one.
Because now I'm trying to remember if that's brought up in Electric Boogaloo, the Canon documentary, which I don't think it is. But
yeah,
anyway.
I don't know that it is, yeah. But it's a terrible movie. It's, you know, it's awesomely terrible. And they loved it.
Terribly awesome.
Right. And so, yeah, so we had stuff like that. I had in the queue, which we didn't get to due to scheduling issues, which is to say I had things I had to do. So we didn't get to immerse ourselves the whole weekend. We had stuff like we had this really great terrible kung fu movie, and I can't remember what it was called now.
Okay.
I keep losing the name of it, but it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
But you know, going back a little bit, you showed them the original Point Break.
Yes. Yes.
And how did they respond?
Oh, they loved it. Oh, they
it's
loved
ridiculous.
It. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Gary Busey stuff was great.
I think Greek actor, I mean, Andrea Martin, mm-hmm, and the entire cast of My Big Fat Greek Wedding would look at Gary Busey and Point Break and go, no, he's not.
Right. and I did make an honor. I probably shouldn't say the actual phrase that Gary Busey said.
Yeah, please don't.
But in honor of that, I did that night. I did make meatball sandwiches for the guys.
But you didn't dive in a pool.
I did not dive in the pool. But I called them end of a dead rhino meatball sandwiches because that's Gary Busey's line.
Man. man.
So, you know.
It's funny you bring that up because, of course, that was directed by Kathryn Bigelow, whose film Detroit is still in theaters, and I need to still get to that.
When
Fiddler opened, and I was just a slug, and I decided to stay on the couch. So I don't recommend a double feature of The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, but I did.
Yeah.
So I did it, so you don't have to. Both very powerful and intense and almost 5 hours, but So it's fascinating to see her career go from – now, did you remember Blue Steel?
Yes.
Jamie Lee Curtis. I think that might be fodder for your next fest.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
So. Yeah. And the fact that they remade Point Break and did it straight.
Yeah,
Sad.
I didn't even bother with it, and I consider Point Break the original with Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze one of my favorite movies.
You have to have a few cocktails in you to enjoy the ridiculousness of that picture. Okay, so one of the films I remember seeing on the list. Mm-hmm. I think when Sam came in and talked about, did you guys watch The Wild Bunch?
They did. I was not there to see it, and that was their big closer.
Oh.
Like I said, I had commitments on Sunday and had to kind of cut mine short. We did watch the one thing we watched in honor of Sam and his phobia of eels is A Cure for Wellness.
Ooh!
So it was brand new out on Blu-ray at the time.
Good call on that because that might be one of the underappreciated films and really underrated. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, it's the kid. His name is
Dane DeHaan.
Thank you, Dane DeHaan. Yeah. You know, Green Goblin from the second reboot.
Yeah.
But it's I remember saying if Stanley Kubrick directed a Hammer horror film.
Yeah.
And this is a story we've seen. He is a businessman who has to go after one of the top CEOs of his company who's been at a wellness hotel, one of those wellness centers in Switzerland. And it's like Hotel California where you check out, but you don't ever really leave.
Right.
You get sucked. So it's one of those you get, whether it's Wicker Man or any of that, where somebody shows up in a mysterious place and, they're never getting out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was surprisingly good. I enjoyed it a lot.
It is. And it's directed by Gore Verbinski, who doesn't really make up for the pirate movies, but anyway, it helps. But it looks great. And when I mean Kubrick, there are exterior shots, outdoor shots that look like outtakes of The Shining. It's that good looking. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that goes and there's scenes with a pool that's going on. And you mix those up with the creepy elements of sneaking through hallways and that sort of thing. It's really I remember it just kind of opened and it just kind of died. Hopefully more people will check it out.
Eels that's
and he's got an eel thing.
Yeah, and Dane DeHaan though, boy, is I don't know about him. He was in Valerian this year, which I saw, and actually we watched that too as part of the festival that year or this year. And,
really?
Yeah, and we were just trying. That was just our theatrical selection, and the three of them enjoyed it. It didn't do much for me. It felt like, I talk about like the kind of science fiction that I enjoy, which I enjoy science fiction a lot. But this is one where it just feels like they throw a bunch of just here's the craziest thing I can think of. I'm going to throw it out there. These are a people. And, it kind of loses some of the internal consistency for me.
And this is Luc Besson.
Yeah, yeah. And it's crazy, and they do weird things. Nick enjoys some of the odd things that they have to do in there. And I was just like, I just didn't care.
How much screen time does Herbie Hancock get? So in a film like this, ladies and gentlemen, this is a futuristic story, and it's based on a novel. I remember seeing the trailers for it, and I leaned over to Emma, who's almost 16, and I said, do you know anybody who reads these? Yeah. And she's like, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody does, but it must be overseas. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But Dane DeHaan's in it, but like Clive Owen is the kind of name, you bring him in. It's like Harrison Ford in Ender's Game.
Right.
Just show up in a uniform and be intense.
Yeah.
But and that's his job, and that's what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple scenes I remember in the trailer, and there's a talking head in a monitor, and I'm like, is that Herbie Hancock? What in the hell is he doing in this? Does he have anything to do?
I don't even know. I don't even remember. No,
I hope he got paid well.
I'm sure he did, and it was a blast, you know, for him. But it wasn't, you know, hugely of substance, you know. Okay. But he's just such an odd leading guy. He perpetually looks sleepy.
Dana Hunt. He's kind of got Neil McDonough eyes.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
really light blue.
Yes.
And he looks about, he's 30. Mm-hmm. And so he can play high schoolers for at least another 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. He had this kind of will they, won't they tension with Cara Delevingne's character, which is, you know, they're partners and I just didn't care about it. I'm just like,
blow stuff up.
Yeah, it's she, you know, he's always hitting on her and she's always like, oh no, I'm not just another notch on your bedpost or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, I don't care. And you know what's going to happen at the end and you're like, okay, right, let's just get there. Come on. And in the meantime, there's a lot of running around through weird environments and spaceships and, you know, and it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, I mean, you know, you can compare it to The Fifth Element in the sense that it's just the
same director.
Yeah, same director, and it does crazy things similar to that. But The Fifth Element felt like it had, as nutty as it was most of the time, it felt like there was some sort of internal consistency there that just wasn't in this movie.
Okay, looking back at the career of Dane DeHaan, we mentioned the two most recent things. Mm-hmm. Knight of Cups, I watched that recently, the Terrence Malick film. And Devil's Knot. Oh, Devil's Knot was they tried to make a feature film of the West Memphis Three.
Oh, okay.
The of the three lads. Paradise Lost, the Paradise Lost documentary. Yeah. They made a film of that.
And he was in Chronicle also.
Yeah, he was in Chronicle, which I never saw. And Jack and Diane, I had to watch because I lost a bet. Yeah. And he's in Lawless, but I don't remember that because I just remember Tom Hardy wanting to beat the crap out of Shia LaBeouf. And there's a scene with Jessica Chastain. Huh. Thank you.
Oh. I'm gonna watch that.
It's not bad. Well, you know, I'm watching Lawless, and it reminded me of mobsters. It's like they look like actors who are playing dress up. They're playing bootleggers, except for Tom Hardy, who looks like a roided up Tim Blake Nelson.
Wow.
You know, if you injected Tim Blake Nelson with Maguire juice, and
come
and,
on,
and he got huge and mumbled. Well, that Tom Hardy mumbles a bit, then who's going to tell him otherwise? Yeah. So anyway, but it's okay.
And Dane DeHaan, I also was just seeing as you're glossing through there, In Treatment, which was a very good HBO series.
Gabriel Byrne one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was him in that show.
I'll have to look and see. So the other thing that happened this summer at our house, by the way, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point. Might not go to a break because I'm here with Joe Scheer, and we're just spraying everything like a sawed-off shotgun or a Pollock painting. Probably next week we'll get to the Glen Campbell documentary from James Keach. But we got rid of cable this summer.
Oh, okay.
So now, you know, we have Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon, and we're kind of going through those. And it's now become more difficult to have movie night at my house.
Yeah.
You know, there are shows that I watch. I of course, enjoying the new incarnation of Mystery Science Theater 3000 because I just love that concept. Always have, always will.
Yeah.
But we just kind of plowed through Parks and Rec in a matter of a couple months, and we watched Glow. Glow was fun.
Yeah, that's fun. That's a lot of fun.
And I know I'm trying to talk them into watching, but The Founder, another underappreciated film.
Mm-hmm.
If you like Michael Keaton, it's basically The Social Network. Replace Facebook with McDonald's.
Yes.
Replace Jesse Eisenberg with Michael Keaton,
right.
And it's basically the film.
Yeah.
Nick Offerman's in it, John Carroll Lynch, Linda Cardinelli. And this was a film that was talked about being up for award consideration at the end of 2016. We heard about it. We knew it was coming out. And they didn't screen it for us. And as we find out later, I believe it was the Weinsteins put it out. And they kind of put more of their eggs in their basket for Lion.
Yeah.
So they kind of put more attention to that. This one kind of got lost by the wayside.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah.
It is really good. Yeah. So anyway, that's out there. But it's now because we can binge watch shows and I'm still a disc guy. Mm-hmm. I'm still a guy that will buy hard disc CDs, DVDs, and there's always now there's a kind of a back and forth where if a disc doesn't work, then I kind of get a raised eyebrow from either my wife or my daughter about this is why we're streaming,
right?
Or what happened earlier this week? Because there was a time where all three of us were in the house at the same. You've been there where everybody's there, everybody's not under one roof, dinner is there. Mm-hmm. We're going to watch something, and the internet is down.
Yeah.
So I finally looked over to Emma and said, we're gonna have family night like it's 1997. Go pick a disc.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, it is the 20th anniversary of the DVD.
Yeah.
And actually, we wound up watching Joy.
Oh.
You know, a nice inspirational story of a woman and her mop.
Right.
So anytime the internet crashes, you're like, this is why I have disc. And of course, earlier this week it was announced that Disney is pulling out all of their streaming from Netflix and everybody else and basically forming their own channel.
Yeah.
And I believe Brian Hartz, a longtime guest here at the show, was also, this is why I buy physical copies of things.
Right.
So don't suggest to me what to watch. I have a stack I need to watch. Get off my back.
Right, yeah. And that seems to be the way that they're going to get around the streaming thing, right? The next Netflix thing is everybody's going to have their own. You can cut the cord and you're still going to be paying cable prices for your streaming libraries, right?
Great.
When it's all aggregated, you know, it's $10 a month here, $10 a month there, and it's, you know,
stockpiling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. So also, and I still do this where I actually walked into a Barnes and Noble because I have to have physical contact from time to time. Yeah, I still get stuff off Amazon, but coming in the mail is the complete collection of Cinematic Titanic, which is not Riff Tracks and it's not Mystery Science Theater, but it features Joel Hodgson, Trace Ballou, J. Elvis Weinstein, film sociology guest Mary Jo Feil, as well as Joel, he was on here, Frank Conniff, and it's their version of riffing on bad movies.
Yeah.
And this collection will include The Oozing Skull. Write these down. These might be for the FBI. The Oozing Skull, Doomsday Machine, The Wasp Woman, Legacy of Blood, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, Frankenstein's Castle of Freaks, it could be the Doctor, Blood of the Vampires, East Meets Watts, oh my God, The Alien Factor, Danger on Tiki Island, War of the Insects, and Rattlers.
Wow.
Now, a couple of these, I know Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and Wasp Woman have both been on Mystery Science Theater. They've had the Mystery Science Theater treatment. Now, I remember talking to Kevin Murphy when Riff Tracks was going to do Manos, The Hands of Fate. And I said, are you going to just do the old riffs? And he's like, no, we wrote new material. And I said, well, you know, there was that thing of it's like a band that are just going to play like Cheap Trick or somebody or U2 where we're just going to play the album in its entirety. So I'm like, are you just going to do the Manos broadcast in its entirety? Well, apparently for the riffers, they don't do that. They come up with new material there. So have you turned the kids onto Mystery Science Theater or any of those?
Not very much. We haven't gotten to that concept yet.
Okay. But, Dad, these movies are old and cheap looking.
Yeah, so far they generally if they don't engage with something, they just walk away. So I haven't gotten to that point of appreciating something that's just really terrible. I think maybe once they start hitting the teenage years and the cynicism kicks in a little bit, we can start that way. I don't know about Emma. I'm sure Emma is a big fan of it, right?
Well, there was early on, she would call them daddy movies with the funny robots. And then I think it was after I inflicted Manos on her where she was, I think I had scarred her for life. And yes, Mary Jo, I know I'm a terrible father.
Right.
And Kyla Moretta, I'm a terrible friend. But after that, it was, she could handle shorts, the short films, which are usually an instructional, informational thing, depending on the subject matter. But she, yeah, and of course, you know, she gets older and she wants to spend more time watching YouTube in her room.
Yeah.
But she was for a while. I was dragging her to Riff Tracks. I remember showing her Sharknado because she had seen Sharknado on television, then the Sharknado Riff Tracks treatment, and I feel like I didn't feel terrible showing her Manos, but I remember looking at her. I'm like, Sunday we are watching Jaws, and she's like, okay, Dad, all right, don't you know. So I don't know. She kind of pops in a little bit. I think it depends on the movie. She's like, what is this?
I'm
like,
bad
plastic aliens of 80. Nah, I'm good.
They might be starting to get into that. They do YouTube videos that are basically that sensibility, that kind of humor anyway.
Or the people who watch stuff, which really boggles the mind because we're old. And we
right. Yeah. It does. Yeah.
Pootie Pie stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to even get into all those stuff things because, you know.
Get
but
off our lawn.
You know, if you're a parent, you know probably what I'm talking about.
There will be eventually something where you just have to say to your kids, I mean, literally say it to them, to their face, I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's payback.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's our version of whatever it is that we watch that our
explaining
parents
to my parents that you could record one channel on the Betamax and watch another channel at the same time.
Yes, yes.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
Okay.
Doofuses that have their own YouTube channel are kids celebrities.
And they make
days.
Money more than we do.
Yes.
Okay, we got time for a couple more minutes. We have time for a dead person we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And this comes with a question. Have you inflicted any of the old Godzilla films on the kids?
I tried, yeah. I felt fortunate that we got to see the new one. I tried some of the original and...
guy in a rubber suit.
Yeah, and it didn't take that well, but, you know. We're working on that.
Okay. Well, I hope I'm saying this right. Haruo Nakajima, actor, passed away on August 7th at the age of 88.
Yeah.
Played Godzilla.
Yeah.
Many times.
He was man in suit. Yeah.
He was man in suit. Or Gojira, I think.
Yes. He actually was here in town just a few weeks ago as part of the horror convention. Yeah. The I don't want to say the wrong one.
Somebody we know got a picture with him, I think.
Really? Yeah.
I think.
My friend Galen Ross, she of Dawn of the Dead and Creepshow fame. She's a legit. I guess I could call her a friend at this point. I've interviewed her, and I walked through an empty shopping mall with her, and I attended an event with her. So maybe I can call her that. I don't know if. But we're also Facebook friends, so there you go. She actually wrote something about how she met him just a couple weeks ago.
So, yeah. Besides that, but I didn't know this, he appeared in several Kurosawa films, including The Hidden Fortress, Stray Dog, Yojimbo. But, yeah, films like the original Godzilla, of course, Godzilla Raids Again, Godzilla King of the Monsters, played Rodan, played... Mothra. He played the head of the Mosura Larva. King Kong versus Godzilla. Mothra versus Godzilla. Frankenstein Conquers the World. Invasion of the Astro Monster. Godzilla versus the Sea Monster. Played King Kong and King Kong Escapes.
Wow.
Son of Godzilla. Destroy All Monsters. All Monsters Attack. Godzilla versus Hedorah. And wrapping things up in 1972-73, Godzilla versus Gigan and Godzilla versus Megalon. Wow. So thank you, sir.
He is man in suit.
He is definitely man in suit. And somebody had written, speaking of conventions, but somebody had talked, going back to Martin Landau, that apparently, and I think it was the AV Club comment, so take it for what it's worth, but somebody saw Martin Landau signing at a convention in a suit.
Wow.
And if you've ever been to a convention, classy guy.
Yeah.
Classy.
Because
there are people we've hugely admired in sweatpants and flip-flops.
Oh, yeah.
And those are the females.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would say ask Sam about his William Forsythe story.
Oh, gosh. And we should also mention singer Barbara Cook passed away. Probably best known, I mean, obviously for Broadway, but she was the voice of the mother in the 1994 animated film of Thumbelina, as well as Hansel and Gretel from TV in 1958. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by. Yeah, Zardoz has spoken. Mm-hmm. Soylent Green is people. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Joe, thanks a lot for hanging out. Go check out the Film Yap and go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Next week, I'll replay the James Keach interview about the Glenn Campbell documentary. I promise. Thanks for listening.